on this episode of the C4SO podcast.
We don't know all the time when change is going to come. Like
sometimes we can predict
it or we're planning for it. Other times we can't. In some sense, we can live a life with our community, with our leadership team, with our congregations, where we're sort of building that equity and that trust all the time. That makes it easier when we go through periods of change. And I just think how important it was is the character of our leadership team in both of those changes, how concerned about the practical and earthly aspects of the church, but every member is also pastoral and caring about the spiritual health, the community health of the church.
Hi, I'm Mickey Lowe.
Hi, I'm Bishop Todd. And
welcome to the C4SO podcast. Welcome back, everyone, to the C4SO podcast. We are continuing in our series on navigating conflict and navigating change. And today we have two guests with us, which is always a treat for Bishop Todd and I. We have John Harrelson and Drew Billups from Seattle. And they are talking to us today about changes that a church can undergo over the years and how a leadership team responds to that. And so this is a really great episode, sort of highlighting potential challenges, whether it's in church planting or in really established churches. Things like changing denominations, forming vestries, changing in theology, changing of government. So lots of changes that churches can go through over the years. And we are just so privileged to get to speak to both of them, having gone through a lot of changes in their own church and having done so in a really Christ-honoring way, in a really loving way, winsome way. And so we are just really looking forward to our listeners gleaning some wisdom from these two guys who are really knowledgeable at this point in handling things like change with grace. So please enjoy this episode with John Harrelson and Drew Billups. Also, keep a lookout for next week's episode where Bishop Todd and I kind of go old school and answer some questions that were called in to the show, which we're really looking forward to and really encourage our listeners to do, actually, because we want to hear from you. And we want to answer your questions and keep these conversations going. So be on the lookout for that. That'll be next week. And without further ado, please enjoy today's episode. Well, John and Drew, thank you guys so much for being with us today.
It's wonderful to be here.
Yeah, great to be here. Thanks.
So we can see you on the screen, but people might not know. Are you both in the Capitol Hill area of Seattle today? Is that where you're sitting?
That's where I'm sitting. That's the neighborhood that I live in.
Yeah.
I'm a little bit further north. We have a home just outside the northern boundary of the city in a neighborhood called Lake Forest Park.
All right. Just want to make sure everybody can see where you guys are coming from. Mm-hmm. Mickey, of course, is ensconced in Tampa, and I'm in my humble little office in Franklin. So great to see you, Mickey.
Yes, great to see you all. And today we have John and Drew to talk about navigating some change. And so our first question to you both, you know, speaking of change, this could be very broad, but if you could pick something about yourself that you could change, and it doesn't have to be crazy, it could be something funny, but what do you wish that you could change about your own self? Drew, let's start with you.
Sure. I wish that I was a more confident handyman, that I had like some substantial contract.
I feel that pain. Deals.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, I'm not completely inept. I'm the kind of person who can sort of look at something and figure out how it works, but I just don't have those resident skills and confidence. And I live in an older home, so there's always something to work on.
Yeah. John, what about you? What do you wish you could change about yourself?
Similarly, I wish that I was a gardener.
Okay.
I wish I could grow things in my yard, had the patience and that sort of thing for that. Several years ago, I just surrendered and said, that's not who I am.
Man, I feel both your pains. My older brothers were really good with their hands, woodworking, working on cars. I've met so many friends over the years who are good gardeners, and I can't do either. So I'm with both you guys.
Yeah, those are so good. Yeah, really, really good ones. And I share them for sure. Now, what have you tried to change? And maybe this is kind of similar. What have you tried to change but have like just totally failed at?
Yeah, for me, what comes to mind recently is trying to get off, you know, screens at the end of the night and have better practices as we move towards sleep. We actually got a subscription to BritBox and we watch all kinds of British drama. I'm so driven by story. I just want to see the end, even if it means.
You're binging. Hey, Drew, Debbie and I have the same thing. BritBox, Acorn. We watch all those British channels.
I figure it's maybe it's some form of Anglican cultural studies for me. So
yeah. I think Mickey's too young. I don't ever hear young people talking about Acorn, but us old people, yeah.
I gotta say, I will admit I have not heard about that. But but hey, if you recommend it and put me on it, then
just go to Prime Video and you'll find them all.
Okay, very cool.
And John, so, what about you? What have you tried to change and totally failed at?
Well, to my own embarrassment, I would say my wife. We've been married, it'll be 28 years in August, and she is amazing and an absolute force of nature.
Yeah.
She's an Enneagram 8 for Enneagram people, and just full of energy and very strong. And she is her own person, which is awesome.
So you're failing to keep up? Is that what you're saying?
A little bit of both.
Not all that strange.
Oh, that's so
funny. Thanks, you guys. As Mickey said, you're in the heart now of our series on navigating change. And John, because of our growing relationship and the bit I've got to know Drew and your guys' church, I know that you've been through some really big changes recently. And so we'd like our audience to hear today what you've learned along the way. So, John, let's start with the big thing that was happening, you know, 2-3 years ago or so. I lose track of time when you were coming out of the PCA and into Anglicanism. Like, that's a big change for people to navigate. Mm-hmm. And what we want today is for our audience to hear what you've learned so they can apply it to, you know, all the changes that are constantly going on in ministry. So say a bit about that big change and how you guys navigated it.
Yeah. I don't know how wise the timing was, because it was, you know, a year or two into the pandemic. So there was all that change happening on top of everything else. But
Hey, John, let me stop you there just for a second to highlight. I want everybody to hear that timing is a very important aspect of change. Mm-hmm. So I don't want that to just kind of go over people's heads. That's a really big deal in change agent theory. So sorry, John, go ahead.
Absolutely. So, you know, we could have made a case for, wow, we've been through so much change with the pandemic. Let's hold off on more change for now. But we just began to feel more and more of not a good fit with our old denomination that we love and have great affection for, and really feeling drawn towards the ACNA and particularly towards C4SO. So what I would say about that process, one of the things that I learned is we had two processes. One, we had a process with our core leadership team, which consisted of elders, deacons, and pastoral staff. And in our old denomination, deacons were lay people, and they had a slight different role than deacons in the Anglican tradition.
Yeah.
But that was, we called ourselves the pastoral care team. And we went through about a 1-year process that was very slow, very deliberate. Drew was a lay elder in our congregation at the time. So he kind of was the architect of that process. And we just really took our time. We prayed. We had retreats. We read things together. We talked with various leaders. We talked with you, Bishop Todd. We talked with another bishop. We talked to some other vestries with other congregations. And all that was done confidentially, because we, you know, if we got to the end of that process and we decided, hey, we're going to stay in our prior denomination, then we didn't want to disturb the congregation with that. So we weren't trying to be secret, but we also weren't trying to trouble people if there wasn't anything to decide. Mm-hmm. But once we got to the point of, yes, we need to do this, and our leadership, we don't require unanimity on decisions like this, but we were unanimous. We were like, yeah, we really feel called to do this. Mm-hmm. Then we opened it up to the congregation, And there was a complicating factor with our prior denomination where we feared, based on other examples of churches like ours, that we could put ourselves in jeopardy with the denomination. Not that we had done anything wrong, but it's kind of an interpretation of, is it okay to lead a church out of the denomination? Right. We think the answer is yes, but there were a number of people who thought the answer was no. Mm-hmm. So we didn't have, we did not have as long of a process with our congregation as we would have liked to have had. Probably not a year, but maybe a 6-month process would have been great with the congregation. But we had about a month and a half that we thought we were like, what's the longest we can do without sort of putting ourselves in jeopardy, kind of thing. So it was a suboptimal process with the congregation. Mm-hmm. Although the vote was very, I can't remember the numbers. Drew might have the numbers. The vote was pretty compelling for people to do it. I think it was over 80%.
Yeah, it was 84% for, 11% against, and 5% abstain.
The extenuating circumstances prevented us from doing as good of a process as we would have wanted to.
I see. So I want to stop you there again, John, because you've said two things that I know to be really important in making change. So first of all, you talked about timing. And I can hear you saying here that there was a thoughtful process. In other words, it was a designed process. You weren't just kind of going through this willy-nilly.
Right.
So the idea of thoughtfulness, designed process, again, I want to underscore that for our listeners, that that's a big part of what it means to lead change in a church.
Totally. And Drew, do you want to speak to that?
Yeah, I think, you know, John pointed out we were constrained in that we didn't have as much time as we would have liked to because of external reasons to bring it out into the congregation. But how we met that challenge really was with an extended process with our leadership ahead of time, where we studied and came to unity together. So we were all on the same page first. And then we looked at all that we needed to do. We kind of put it out there, made our list, made a timeline, and prepped for how we were going to do the rollout ahead of time. And
yeah.
We wanted to, even though it was a condensed period of time with our congregation, we wanted to have many different ways that people could interact with us, get their thoughts out. So we planned all of these, and a lot of them were on Zoom because it was a pandemic, kind of community check-ins where you can bring your questions and discuss them. We had prayer times as a community, and we had all this planned ahead of time so that when we did go public, we could just say, here's a big email, here are all the dates. If you want to talk about this, if you want to pray about this, here are all the opportunities to do that. So that we hit the ground running when it became public.
Yeah. So let me underscore that again. I think Drew brought up another big important chunk, and that is communication. Like during times of change, you want to err on the side of over communicating, not under communicating. Mm-hmm. So, John, help us think about two other big aspects of change management, which is scope, like how much change, and pace. At what pace can you do it? So, John, I'm thinking about all you guys had to do to form a vestry, which for you was actually a change in church government, pretty big deal. And then in the last year or so, changing your view on women leaders, which is a change of theology. So
right.
You had a lot of change, you know, of denomination, of government, of theology. How did you manage the scope and pace of that?
Yeah, that's a good question. The vestry formation, because of how we governed our church before, really hasn't been as big of a change. We kind of operated that way. And now as we're going through the vestry formalization and bylaws and things of that nature, that it's more of a codifying our practices versus a radical change. So that hasn't been a huge as big of a change as it might have been if we were coming out of a different way of mm-hmm. operating in some churches. The women in ministry leadership was a huge change, but we took a year with our congregation to do that.
So there you're getting at pace.
Yeah.
Right.
And so we really slowed that one down, and our leadership did it simultaneously with our congregation. So it wasn't like leadership did it first and then started the congregation. We went through it all at the same time.
Yeah.
And we had a class on it. We had public forums. We had prayer times, lots of communication, resource page on our website. Here are things to read. Here's this view. Here's that view. You know, we tried to balance things out and give people here are the sort of main alternatives, ways to answer these questions.
Yeah. So Drew, as a key lay leader who was, I can imagine, simultaneously kind of experiencing these changes, but also helping to lead the church through it. What was your kind of personal experience of the scope and pace of those big changes of denomination, government, theology?
Yeah, I think that with both conversations in our what we call our pastoral care team, which has now become our vestry, it was so just front and center for us that being people-centric and focusing on unity had to be number one. Like, it's not for us about getting from a point A to point B as much as it is caring for these people, making sure that at the end of this decision, wherever we come out, that we can still worship together and love each other as community. Yeah. Well, especially in these polarizing times, we were just so keen on, yeah, nothing's perfect. No process is going to be perfect. But our intent that governed all of our choices in both of these big processes was that we want to care for our people, shepherd our people, give everyone the feeling that they've been consulted and communicated with and that they've had the opportunity to speak their mind and pray about this and all of that. That was front and center. That was the biggest thing for me.
Thanks, Drew. That's super helpful. When Mickey and I were preparing for this podcast, we were wondering about the relational ethics of change, of things like love and humility and being patient with those who they're just going a little slower. Not that they're bad or dumb or anything like that. So it's great to hear you underscore that there is an ethics, a relational ethics that's attached to change agent. And so I'm so glad that in this first part of the podcast already, you guys have named really important things: timing, having a thoughtfully designed process with lots of good communication, being mindful of the scope and pace of change. And I guess I want to say that being mindful of that scope and pace has a leadership aspect to it, and it has kind of a practical aspect to it. But I love the accent that Drew just gave us, that also managing scope and change has a relational communal ethic attached to it as well. So thank you guys. That's all super helpful.
Well, and you know, one thing that was very gratifying after the denominational change, or at the end of that, when the Presbyterian way is when you have a vote to have an extended time of community discussion before that, where people can give their for and against talks. And we did that prior to the vote to change denominations. And even the people, many of the people who stood up and said, our conscience leads us to vote against this, explicitly said, we love Grace. We've raised our kids here. This is our community. We're not going anywhere. But our conscience leads us to vote no. Mm-hmm. That just, to me, spoke volumes about that kind of community care.
You've probably heard the big news around C4SO. We've begun our search for a new diocesan bishop. After 15 years of faithful ministry, Bishop Todd Hunter announced his retirement. That means we're accepting nominations for a new diocesan bishop to succeed Bishop Todd, and we can't do it without your help. If you're a clergy person within C4SO, we invite you to nominate a candidate for diocesan bishop. Any priest in good standing from within the diocese or the broader ACNA is eligible to be nominated. your nomination goes straight to C4SO's search committee, who will consider, interview, and narrow down candidates before selecting two or three to put forth for an election in spring 2025. The deadline for submitting a nomination for C4SO's new diocesan bishop is September 30th, 2024. Submit your nomination today at c4so.org. Thanks in advance for helping us find C4SO's next diocesan bishop.
It's not always as dramatic as changing denominations, but, you know, as Bishop Todd and I were workshopping some issues that we face in local churches, we thought you two would be perfect to speak to them. A few that we kind of threw out when it comes to potential conflict or seasons of change approaching a church is whether there's growth, like a lot of growth or no growth in a church, right? If there's a lot of growth or there's no growth, that requires some conversations about what to do, right? Like, do you shift to two services? Or if growth is plateauing, like, do we need to program or do more things? So that's kind of one area. Another area that's kind of inevitable is either staff or volunteer turnover. Like, what do you do? We need more hands. Or entrusting the vision of a church to others and empowering new leaders, implementing new strategies, whether it's for growth or for programs or whatever it may be. How would you guys encourage church leaders to create and maintain unity in the midst of those changes? So whether there's potential for leaders not seeing eye to eye or being in sort of uncharted territory when it comes to church development, how would you all counsel church leaders to create and maintain unity even in that process? So maybe, Drew, let's start with you.
Yeah, you know, when I think about this, we don't know all the time when change is going to come. Like, sometimes
unfortunately, yeah.
predict it or we're planning for it. Other times we can't. Right. So in some sense, I think we can live a life with our community, with our leadership team, with our congregations, where we're sort of building that equity and that trust all the time. That makes it easier when we go through periods of change. And I just think how important it was is the character of our leadership team in both of those changes, how, you know, for our, what we call our pastoral care team, that's now our vestry, they're concerned about the practical and earthly aspects of the church, but every member is also pastoral and caring about the spiritual health, the community health of the church. And also just the team itself, we have such like love and respect for each other. We pray together. We've weathered the, you know, all the pandemic challenges that the church had together in love, making a lot of hard decisions. And because we have that team, that we can have differences and express them, but it's healthy. We pray together. We love each other. Like, and we can work through hard issues and come to unity. That helps, like, just that, that sort of like the champagne glass thing where it filters down from the top and fills all the glasses. It's each of the individual members of our leadership team have relationships with people in the community. And they create conversations just in life together that help ease anxiety about all these questions, you know? So that's what I would say is investing in healthy relationships, especially in your leadership team, but throughout the congregation, so that you're ready when change happens.
Yeah, no, that's great. Like, it flows from the top down. There has to be this model of unity from the leadership.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
So, John, if we were doing kind of just like word association, and I say, you know, the typical sort of staff and volunteer turnover that happens all the time that Mickey mentioned, what comes to your mind about managing that sort of change or leading that sort of change?
Yeah, that's a good question. I mean, I've been the senior pastor at Grace for 20 years. So I've, as Mickey, as you were going through the list, I was like, we've been there.
You've seen it all.
Totally. You know, definitely the things that have been mentioned, communication, and I think an openness to conflict. I've heard the phrase, you know, you want to mine for conflict. Like, don't just assume everybody's on board, like, seek out the dissenting opinions. Yeah. And really give people a voice in that. Yeah. And, you know, as much as possible, especially with like outgoing staff or something like that, you want to honor them, you know, in front of the congregation. You don't want to throw anybody under the bus or that sort of thing. And maybe I'm jumping ahead of ourselves in the talk, but, you know, the processes we're talking about are so integrally related to the sort of state of the soul of the leaders.
Yeah.
You know, I think about changes that I've led the congregation through in over the last 20 years, and my own personal growth has been so critical. Like, I think that the big changes that we've gone through the past couple of years have been hard, but they've gone much better, I think, to a fair amount because of the maturity of our leadership and my own personal growth. Friedman, in his book Failure of Nerve, he talks about how the primary job of a leader is to manage their own anxiety.
Yeah, so, right. Yeah.
So as I'm learning how to do that and take my own anxiety to the Lord and be honest with others, that helps create a space where, you know, where I'm okay going through change, so other people can feel the freedom to be exactly where they are.
Yeah.
Anxious, excited, mad, whatever it is.
Yeah.
You know, leadership has to be able to make space for that. And that really is core to our own soul work and care.
Yeah. Everybody who knows me knows how much I've benefited from Friedman in that book. And so it delights me, John, to hear you directly connect the formation of our own soul as leaders. We navigate the natural anxiety that's attached to change, because so much of that anxiety is natural. We can't like make it go away, but to your point, we can learn to deal with it in better or worse ways. And so I love to hear you make that connection.
One of the things that I tell people is prior changes versus the most recent ones. Even though these last couple of big changes have gone the way that I hope that they would, I am far less driven by the need to win anymore than I used to be. It used to be like, oh man, we got to do this, or sort of all is lost. And it's like, no, if that didn't happen, it would be sad. You know, if we would have made a different decision on women priests, I would have been saddened by that. But I would have been okay, and the church would have been okay, and just so I don't have to win anymore, which is to me very helpful, and I'm learning to go slower.
Yeah, that gets me, Drew. I want to go back to you for a second. That gets to what as I think about what you've been saying, Drew, and what John just said. It sounds to me like you guys have created a church culture. You know, like sometimes we use the phrase corporate culture, which doesn't mean corporations. It just means the culture of any gathered group of people. So since we're talking here about church, talk about church culture. I hear you guys saying you've created a church culture that I'm sure it's not perfect, but that more or less is able to handle change because of the culture you've carefully created, even as you're making change. Am I hearing you right, Drew?
Yeah, I believe that's right. And I've been at Grace for 20 years, and that's long before our current polarized political climate and how that's been impacting churches. But Grace has always been a place that people had differences. People had political differences. People had, you know, other kinds of differences. We've never seen eye to eye on all the things, but we always came together as a community in worship and caring for each other in life and things like that. I think that as we've gone through more polarizing times with COVID and all of that, it's ramped up the difficulty of maintaining that. But we have built something that we could work off of, that's gotten us through
these more polarizing times and also, you know, these big changes that we've come. Yeah.
You know what, Drew, what made me think of it is when you said that change sometimes is planned. Other times, as you said, it sneaks up on us. And if you haven't cultivated the kind of culture I hear you guys talk about, when either whether it's planned change or when it sneaks up on us, we're not ready to deal with it. So again, I just want the leaders that listen to this podcast to hear the importance of the kind of relational ethic, that pastoral sort of ethic that you guys have cultivated. I think that's super important.
One of the practices that we've adopted, you know, is we tried to be people-centric and, you know, maintain unity. But in these changes, you know, people have decided to leave the church. And that's sad, but it's fine. And so what we've started to do is send people, you know, at the end of a worship service, you know, we'll bring them in front of the church and say, hey, they're going to be going to a different church now. And we bless them in the name of the Lord and just kind of normalize that.
Yeah.
Like we're sad, but we also, you know, there's mutual blessing as they depart.
Yeah.
That's been a helpful community practice where people don't have to like sneak out the back door or six months from now. Right. You're like, where did Mickey go?
Where'd they go? No. Right.
Yeah. What happened
to
her?
That sounds super healthy.
Totally. Yeah. I really enjoy all the wisdom that you guys are sharing with us and really modeling that sort of non-anxious presence in our congregations as a leadership and how important that is. And to take seriously our own spiritual formation, even as we're leading others in these local church contexts, and how that really equips us to handle change and to navigate it and lead a congregation through changes. So yeah, I'm hearing you guys say it's important to take that seriously personally and from the top down model that for the church. And that should really encourage us to sort of preemptively think about what, you know, God could bring to a congregation. There's always something to navigate. I feel like it's always something, especially as a church plant, you know, there's always something we're looking toward or looking for. And so asking ourselves these questions of what can we do in order to equip us as leaders to handle change? And then how are we going to model that in a non-anxious way? So I'm really grateful for all that you guys are saying. We would love to hear from both of you or either of you, maybe like a success story of change, something that you've seen happen either in a person or in a group or in your congregation, how that went really well and you saw like a smooth transition and it's just been a really successful story. I mean, even as you guys are speaking, like I think about your congregation that's now a part of C4SO, like what a beautiful thing that is for us. You know, we have you guys. But if you can think of like any other story, of just a successful story of change.
I can jump in. For me, so I've been on staff as an assistant pastor for about 2 years at Grace, and I oversee our ministry called Serving the City. And throughout its multi-decade history, Grace has always done some efforts to care for people in our community, the marginalized, and things like that, but much more in a sort of a little bit haphazard way. And so we've gotten really focused in our efforts. And one of the things that me and my team with Serving the City have just really felt led by the Lord is that our focus should be on discipling our people to service. It's not about just giving money to organizations that are doing good things and keeping it all at arm's length, but it's about transformation of our people, seeing service of others in our community as an integral part of our walk with Jesus. And we've been doing that work, and I'm really just so enthusiastic to see how, the traction that it's getting and the way that people are changing their schedules, fitting stuff in, and really making commitments to be out there volunteering and caring for people in our community.
That's great.
Full of that.
John, I'd like us to end by you bringing us back to what I want to call the psychology, the spirituality of change, and the soul of leaders. I just want to give you a minute to let that be our kind of closing thought and to see what further reflections you have on the importance of and the connection between the soul of a leader as they try to do the hardest leadership there really is, and that is to create change.
Yeah, that's a great question. I would say for me, and every leader is going to have a different story. When we brought someone on staff, 2014, 2015. And I didn't even know what contemplative prayer was back then. But I knew we needed it, even not knowing what it was. So we brought a woman, Debbie Smith, on staff, and she was coming from an Episcopal background, and she also a spiritual director. And so she had been in that world, and she brought these things to us. And so for me, contemplative prayer has been just such a huge part of, you know, Nouwen says, when you try to sit still, he's like, my soul is like a banana tree full of monkeys jumping up and down. And so that, and I really resonate with that. So you try to sit still and turn the phone off and whatever, and you're just like, you know, where do I even start? So just learning how to be present to the Lord and present to myself. And I think for me, the contemplative prayer stream has been an enormous resource. Because before I had the theology of, oh, God loves me right now, as is, no conditions.
Yeah.
But
you're a good Reformed guy.
Absolutely. You know, I could preach the sermon about it and believe it, but for me, contemplative prayer has been a way to actually experience it in this transformational way that, God is sitting with me in the midst of all my unfinished business and my fears and my chaos. And I actually beginning to taste that love. And then that is what is able to, that I'm able to take out of that and give to others.
So, John, I have a feeling you're also saying that understanding about that about yourself allowed you to understand how to be patient with other people who are going through the same thing.
100%. 100%.
Yeah. So, Mickey, you know, I always say I'm a little jealous of you and Travis and anybody who's planting a church. And I'm just thinking of all the things that you get to take away today.
Yeah.
And all the others leaders listening. I just want to summarize quickly because I think it was so important.
Yeah.
So the notion that Drew talked about creating and maintaining a culture in which change can happen for better, for worse. John's thoughts about timing, about having a well-designed, thoughtful process. Mm-hmm. Loved, I forget if it was John or Drew now, about communicating. John helped us see about the scope and pace of change, doing this stuff relationally, and then how this all gets linked to our soul development. You got a lot to take away here today, Mickey. I'm a little jealous that I don't get to go apply this somewhere in the church.
No, absolutely. And you know, to understand also that there's this freedom to be honest with the Lord too about our own anxieties. You know, I think oftentimes we think of ourselves like, you know, we have to be brave and we have to lead the way and we have to, and sure, there is that, but also like the Lord does welcome my own fears about change. I mean, it doesn't come naturally to many of us. And so to know that, no, it's actually really important to sit down with the Lord and be like, I think you're calling us to this change. I'm really scared. I need you and I need your spirit to comfort me and to guide me so that I become confident in what I really believe that you're calling this church to be. And so I can lead others in that way. It's really important, I think, to be honest with the Lord. And I'm glad you said that, John, because I think we often forget.
Me too. Yeah, it really alerts us to change as a two-sided coin.
Yeah.
If you're the one leading change, there's a certain sort of anxiety attached to that.
Mm-hmm.
If you're the person for whom change is being sort of given to you, that's another sort of, you know, maybe different sorts of anxiety. So Anyway, yeah. Thanks you all. Mickey, great to see you as always. And John and Drew, thanks for being our guests today. This was really helpful.
Thank you both.
It's great to be with you both.
Yeah, thank you. Good to see you both.
Thanks so much for tuning in to the C4SO podcast. If you like what you heard, please feel free to share this episode and subscribe and leave a review. It helps us to get the word out. Thanks.